Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm Jerry Rushford, Professor of Church History at Seaver College, and I'm joined today by Chris Altrock, who is the preaching minister for the Highland Church of Christ in Memphis, Tennessee. Chris, welcome back to Pepperdine.
Thanks, Jerry. It's great to be here.
How many times have you been here, do you think?
Oh, total, probably over 10, I guess, between the lectureships and different events.
And dating back to, do you recall the first time we lured you out here?
Yeah, I think the first time that I came was when I was preaching in New Mexico, and that would have been around 94, 95.
Wow.
So it's been a while.
So it's been about 15 years, and you've been here about 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what brought you here today?
Well, I was honored to come and be part of the preacher's luncheon today. Just a great gathering of ministers and preachers from the California area and speak to them.
Well, I got to be there, and that was a great group.
Yeah,
and
they are.
That's a long tradition. They've been coming for 31 years that I've been involved, and it's just a great tradition to launch the new year in September.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us a little about your background. You didn't grow up in a church family, so how do you become a Christian?
Yeah, I have. A lot of people are surprised to learn that I didn't grow up in a Christian family. But my mom and dad, they weren't anti-religion. They weren't anti-God, but we just never prayed, never read the Bible. I don't remember even seeing a Bible in our home growing up. We lived in a very small town in rural New Mexico, and there wasn't even a church in our small town. So that was just not a part of our life at all. And it wasn't really until high school when a friend, about our sophomore year, a friend named Gary Cox, who was a senior at that time and a member of the Cloudcroft Church of Christ, we had moved into Cloudcroft by that point, invited us to come to some youth event that the church was putting on, small church, 26, 30 people. And Gary just reached out to me and my twin brother, Craig, and studied the Bible with us, talked to us about Jesus. And that whole year, we just kept going to church with him. And Gary really just befriended us and brought us into his life and into his family. And after about a year of that, my brother and I both decided that this was really the right thing to do. We really needed to follow God and try to become a follower of Jesus. So we were both baptized into Christ.
And were you in the 11th grade?
It was the very end of our sophomore year, right before the summer break. And
then from there, you did your undergraduate work where?
That's right. My brother and I both went to New Mexico State University in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and we both went in as engineers. I was in EE, and my brother was mechanical engineering. And we ended up changing that, but that's where we started, New Mexico State University. And I finished at New Mexico State with a psychology degree.
Now, was there a campus ministry there?
There was. The woman who's now my wife and I started attending the University Church in Las Cruces. There's a strong campus ministry there, and we got involved in that immediately. And that campus ministry really played an important role in our lives. Mm-hmm. In fact, my wife had a very similar background. Her family, they were not very active churchgoers, and so it was a member of that church who reached out to her and shared the story of Jesus with her, and she was baptized. And so then we both started getting involved in that campus ministry at the University Church.
Now, when you graduated after 4 years, were you thinking of some form of ministry at that point?
Well, again, about halfway through college, I was really struggling with what to do with myself and the future, because I knew for sure I didn't want to be in engineering. I'd taken enough engineering classes to know that. And so I dabbled in education, counseling and educational psychology, thought about sports medicine, and just could not find a major that I could see myself doing for the rest of my life. But at the same time, had gotten more and more involved in this campus ministry, leading Bible studies. I was in a kind of a one-on-one mentoring relationship with the campus minister and helping coordinate retreats and different activities for the campus ministry. And so really by about halfway through college, the only thing I had any real passion for was what I was doing with the campus ministry. And not what I was studying in the classroom. And so I kind of took that to be God's leading. And at that point decided that what I was called to do was to go into some kind of full-time ministry. And at that point, that's when I decided to go into psychology because I felt like psychology might provide a foundation for mm-hmm. working with people in a congregational sense.
So where did you go from New Mexico State?
I went from New Mexico State to Harding University Graduate School of Religion. I had some friends who had graduated from there and were working at the University Church in Las Cruces, and that was our connection there.
And that's in Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee, yeah.
And were you there like 3 years or?
We were there 3.5 years.
And which degrees did you do there?
Well, I did the Master's of Divinity degree and then moved away, and after 3 or 4 years got back into their Doctor of Ministry degree and completed yeah. that degree through Harding as well.
Now, today you spoke to the preachers on, I forget your exact title, but the crossroads of the gospel of Christ and postmodern thought. And is that because your own background comes out of not necessarily a church family, but you yourself are sort of coming to Christianity in your teenage years? Is your personal background part of what drove you to sort of write about postmodern?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, because of what I experienced, I've always been passionate about wanting to help the church better understand people like me, people mm-hmm. that aren't going to church, that don't have a background in the Christian faith, and exploring how to reach out and befriend and bring them into the Christian faith. And so I began to realize that things are very different right now in terms of our culture, and people who are like me today are very different than I was when I was growing up, and they're dealing with a whole set of different issues and faith options before them, and globalization has just brought the world closer together, so that mm-hmm. if you have any openness to spiritual things, there's a plethora of options before you. And so, you know, I began to realize that if we're going to reach the Chris Altrock of today, then it's just a different kind of person, a different kind of set of issues to deal with. And I really wanted to explore that. That's kind of what got me into postmodernity.
Hmm. Now, when you finished your MDiv, you went back home to New Mexico to be the minister of the University Church Christ.
That's right.
Where you attended as a student.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And my wife was baptized in that church. We were married in that church. I was an intern in the campus ministry in that church.
Oh, wow.
And then finally came back and preached for that church.
But then you left there after a few years to return to Memphis to get the doctorate. Mm-hmm. And then you became an associate minister at Highland?
Well, yeah. We moved back to Memphis in 1998. And at that point, Highland was exploring a kind of a co-preaching model. And there were several congregations within Churches of Christ that were exploring that model. And so Harold Schenck and I began kind of co-preaching. At that point, we had three services. So one Sunday he'd take two, I'd take one, and the next Sunday we'd mm-hmm. swap. And then eventually we had four services. He'd take two, I'd take two, and then we'd swap. And that was just a marvelous time of ministry together, because we really kind of complemented one another and built off each other's strengths and weaknesses. And I think in the end we were both better preachers mm-hmm. for having worked together in that kind of model.
But then he moved on to Oklahoma Christian University to be professor of Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And so are you sharing the pulpit with anybody else, or now you're the preaching minister of the Highland Church?
Yeah, I think we'd like to get back to that model. When Harold left, we began a relocation project, and that relocation project has kind of consumed a lot of our attention and energy. And so right now we've just kind of configured things to get through the transition. We're a church that is very much involved in ministry to the poor. We work with a ministry called Memphis Urban Ministry mm-hmm. that serves the poor in Memphis.
That's Jim Harbin.
Jim Harbin's the director of
Memphis Urban
Ministry.
He taught for us last year at the Pepperdine Bible Lectures.
That's right.
And he's coming back again this year.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. He's a wonderful man. Great, great servant.
Now, when will you move into this new building? Around Easter? Or?
We are hoping. Our construction guys tell us that we're on schedule to finish the building by Easter. And so we'd like to launch at some point around that date. Easter of next year.
Let me walk through your four books. Are there four that you've written? Which did you write first?
The first one was called The Cross, Saved by the Shame of It All. And it was an exploration of the shame and the disgrace of the cross and what that means to have a Messiah who was disgraced like that, and what that means for us as followers of that same Messiah.
And who published that for you?
College Press published that.
Oh, yeah.
And then I wrote ACU Press had a study series called Streams of Mercy, and I wrote the one on the Book of Mark for series.
I know that series.
And then the last two Chalice Press has done the –
That's the publishing company in St. Louis?
That's right.
Affiliated with the Disciples of Christ, yeah.
Yeah. And so they did Preaching to Pluralists, which is a book on postmodernism and trying to understand what it is and the implications of postmodernism.
Now, what's the subtitle? Preaching to Pluralists.
And then in a Postmodern Era.
In a Postmodern Era.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty similar to what you did today at the luncheon. I mean, that you were
– That's right. Yeah, we tried to look at, I guess, kind of get our minds around what is postmodernism. And then how do we minister in the midst of postmodernism?
Now, how was that book received? It came out how many years ago?
That book came out in 2004, I think.
Yeah.
And it was very well received. I think it was, especially within Churches of Christ, it was at a point where more and more people were beginning to wrestle with these cultural changes and how to minister, how to preach, how to serve in the midst of them. And so I think it was kind of good timing that people were beginning to ask those kinds of questions. Had an opportunity to teach on it here at the Pepperdine Lectureship in one of those evening classes and was received well. And I know several classes have used it, either preaching or ministry classes in different colleges and universities. So I think it's been useful. I think it's been helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as you know, with any book, there's always things you wish you did differently.
Yeah.
But I think it's been helpful.
Now, you followed that up with going a different direction on your fourth book, didn't you?
Yeah, the last book was Rebuilding Relationships. It's a look at the Sermon on the Mount. And the idea for it came when I was writing Preaching to Pluralists because towards the end of Preaching to Pluralists, I took the Sermon on the Mount and I tried to say, What are some themes that Jesus raises here that might find some connection to these changes, these shifts that are going on within our culture? And I thought that was intriguing. And so eventually I just sat down and kind of worked back through the entire Sermon on the Mount, trying to think back through those themes. And it's not quite framed this way, but the way I now see that last book is I think that If the church today could just recapture the spirit of the Sermon on the Mount, if we were the community of people that Jesus describes in Matthew 5-7, then we would make a tremendous impact in this postmodern culture because we would become good news, and all the issues that people have about the Christian faith and all the reasons why they don't want to be part of the Christian institutions, I think would fade away. If the church could really recapture that spirit,
mm-hmm.
So I hope people will read that kind of in that vein of what would it mean for us to be living out the Sermon on the Mount in our congregation, and how could that impact our community?
Now today, in your lesson to the ministers in Han Fireside Room, you were sort of coming out of both your third and fourth book. I mean, you were talking about Preaching to Pluralists, but you sort of camped in the Sermon on the Mount today and the chapters immediately afterward. You gave some stunning statistics today. What were they about the percentage of people who are unchurched and the percentage of people who have those at the tip of your tongue?
You know, some of those came out of the 2008 Pew Forum study, which was one of the most comprehensive studies of the of the spiritual lives of Americans. And it was a remarkable study. And I think the two that we looked at today was that approximately 51% of Americans identify themselves as Protestant. And so we're right on the tipping point of becoming a minority Protestant country,
mm-hmm.
and which is part of that shift from a Christian nation to a non-Christian nation. And then the other one that we looked at was that there's been a threefold increase in the number of people who say they have no religious preference.
Yes. Yeah, from 5 to 15.
Yeah. And so we may look at that and say, well, 15% doesn't seem that bad, but a threefold increase from somewhere in the 70s to about 2006 is very significant.
Yeah.
And again, part of that shift that we're going through.
What kind of comments did you get afterward today as we just mingled? I mean, ministers coming up and talking, and other than complimenting, it was a good lesson. Did anybody talk specifically about their own community or some of the things they're doing? Or,
well, I know a lot of the, of course, a lot of the people that were there today are from California, and you know, many of them affirmed that the people that they are, the communities they're ministering in, are exhibiting those kinds of characteristics of postmodernism. And I was talking to one couple, young couple that's been at their church for about 5 years, and they've been experimenting with how to move from that kind of attractional strategy where we just say, hey, we have an event at our building. Why don't you come to us and be part of it, and instead do something more missional, getting out into the neighborhood. And they had, it sounded to me like they had a group of maybe three or four young couples that they were just beginning to explore what would that look like in our community. And it was kind of a pilot project that they were launching out. And then depending on how that went, maybe the whole church could get involved with it again. But I know we're really wrestling with that where we are. We're an 80-year-old congregation.
And about what size? How, on a typical Sunday?
Well, we have about 850 on Sunday mornings, and very established church, good history and heritage. But we're wrestling with that whole notion of how do we move from just saying come to us and get what you need, and instead go out into the community. And so, you know, we're trying all sorts of different things. It's kind of an exciting time. You know, we're willing to try and fail in order to succeed eventually at some different kinds of ministry.
Now, for the last 5 years, when somebody has asked me for a book on how to reach postmoderns or sort of a Christian reaction, I've mentioned your book. But now who do you mention? Which in the last 5 years, not counting your own book, which ones have encouraged you? Who's writing on this topic that you would say, boy, this one really gave me some insights?
Yeah. There's a lot of really good stuff out right now and a lot of good material. One of the ones that I read recently was by Graham and Johnston, Living at the Crossroads, two professors. And what they try to do is they try to walk through – it's a bit cumbersome, but it's worth the read. They try to walk through the historical roots of postmodernism and modernism so that kind of by the time you finish the book, you have a better sense of how history has kind of brought us – to this point, that this isn't just some flash in the pan, some trend that's going to last a decade or so and then go away. And I found that very helpful because they took history all the way from ancient Greece to modern times and kind of marched through that history, showing how these shifts were beginning to take place. So that's been very helpful. And I've been recommending that book recently to people who want to explore a little bit more about how did we get to where we are today.
Yeah. You come to the Pepperdine Bible Lectures a lot. You were here 4 months ago. I can't even remember what we had you do, but what did you do 4 months ago and how was that received?
Well, we did a very small slice looking at postmodernism and what it is and some of the basic steps that a church might take to try to minister in a more of a postmodern context. And it was very well received. And I think people are still, ministers especially, are still wrestling with these issues and trying to understand these issues and how to minister in the midst of them. So it seems to me people are still hungry for help in this area.
Is there anyone else in Churches of Christ either publishing or even doing? Are there other attempts to take the church out of the church building into the community that you have observed other parts of the country?
Well, I know so many of these new church plants that are going on right now through Stadia and Kairos and Mission Alive are – those are the guys that are really on the front lines of this thinking and these strategies. A couple of friends of mine who used to serve at Highland, Ryan Porsche and Charles Kaiser, have planted a church in Uptown Dallas, and – They're really living out it. It's a very different model of church, a theology that's very much restoration theology, but the way that the church looks and the strategies that are using are very different. So I think all these young guys that are coming out and planting churches through these church planting ministries are really helping us to see what would that look like if we could put legs on it. What would that look like if we really fleshed that out and lived it out? What would that look like? So I'm just so grateful for Stan Granberg and others who are leading those ministries.
You gave an example today about a church that was moving out of its building and having classes in McDonald's and White Castle hamburgers.
That's right.
Who was that and where is
– Yeah, it was a St. Stephen Church in Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, Louisville.
Very, very large church, 10,000 people in attendance.
And what religious background? Reformed church background or
– I think Presbyterian.
Yeah.
But off the top of my head, I cannot remember now. But they were a church plant several years ago and had decided that they were going to do everything they could to get into the community rather than asking the community to come to them. So they've been holding these adult Sunday school classes in McDonald's and White Castle apparently experiencing a lot of fruit as people stumble upon these classes in McDonald's.
Now, do they have to get permission from McDonald's to come in? I mean, how do you
– That's my understanding. Apparently, they form some good relationships with managers and you know, people who are running these businesses and have
– So it can't be a real too structured class. I mean, are they just sort of in a corner?
That's my understanding, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they can't overtake McDonald's or overtake the White Castle. But enough to be present but not obnoxious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about for you now in the years to come? What's the fifth book you're working on? And once you finally get into this building at Easter, does that sort of open some paths now? Like you said, you gave all your energy to this relocation. You used to be down on Highland Street, and now you're out where?
That's right. This new facility is on the eastern edge of Shelby County. It's the growth curve. It's the fastest growing part of the county, but it does put us 13 miles east of where we were, and so it and we knew this going in. It creates certain challenges for us. We are still deeply committed to serving the poor and ministering to the city, and we do that through our partnerships with Memphis Urban Ministry and a ministry called Hope Works and Agape and a ministry called Fit that serves homeless pregnant women, and we're doing other things. I mean, God just opens up opportunities. Our teenagers recently did what's called a poverty plunge, where they live for about 36 hours in complete poverty and just experience what it's like to be homeless. And after that experience, they said, we want to do something for the people that we encountered that don't have shoes, because that was one of the things that they experienced was not having your own shoes. So they did this soul drive called Soul to Soul, and we collected shoes, and they went back downtown and gave shoes to 200 homeless people. And they did it in a way that was respectful and treated these individuals with dignity. You know, they sat down with them and talked to them, asked them their names, asked them what shoes they'd like, went back, got the shoes, asked if they liked the color. If not, went back and got another pair. And so we really hope to continue to serve the city in increasing ways and in some ways kind of buck the trend of the suburbs. We want to be a church that continues to care for the poor. We want to be also do a better job of being a neighborhood church. We had kind of gotten away from that. And so we're already beginning to make plans for getting to know our immediate church neighbors, finding out what their needs are, how we can serve them using our own facility for the community. We really want our facility to be a community center. And if a local school needs it for graduation, or if a business needs it for a staff meeting, or a group of moms needs it to have a place for the kids to play, we want it to be the community's building. And so we're excited about that opportunity as well. And then we've been talking about city, region, world, and neighborhood. City, region, world, and neighborhood. And we want to keep our eyes on all four of those areas as
Boy,
we launch
out. Boy,
that's
exciting. And what's the fifth book, or is that even beginning to percolate?
I really want to take this material from Matthew 8 and 9, where I think Jesus is demonstrating what it looks like to be salt and light, and flesh that out.
That was very good. That was the heart of your message today.
Yeah, it's I've got a proposal sitting on somebody's desk who may listen to this and they're analyzing it and seeing if it might be useful for their purposes. So,
well, let me close with this. Last night, you had the privilege of speaking to a packed house of Pepperdine students at Stauffer Chapel. Mm. I have spoken to that group, and not this year. It's been a couple of years, but boy, there's a lot of energy when those mm-hmm. kids get together on Sunday night. I think that was your first time to experience it.
That's
so
right.
Tell us what that was like.
That was very exciting. That room is so full of energy. And, you know, it's late at night. The semester's starting. I'm sure those kids have all kinds of assignments. But you could tell they really wanted to be there. They really wanted to worship. And they cared deeply for God. I mean, there's 150, 200 students there. And they were engaged. They weren't there texting or surfing the web. They were engaged in worship and engaged in the Word. And
now, did you use PowerPoint there?
No, we did that all unplugged.
Oh, okay.
Unplugged, just a Bible and just standing there.
Because today you use PowerPoint.
That's right.
And that was very effective. And down at Stauffer, we have that large screen. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if you were going to use that or.
Yeah, Thomas, one of the campus ministers, said that they like to do that as kind of laid back as as possible. But, you know, that experience makes me excited about the future of the church because those kids are they are so eager to be sold out for Jesus and to sacrifice for Jesus and just to serve people in the name of mm-hmm. Jesus. And so I think that really spells out a great future for the church.
Yeah, we're proud of our students. They really mm-hmm. are. This generation is really a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
For those of us who've had them in class, or I hire 140 of them to work the Bible lectures.
Wow.
And all the letters that came in this year were all about them.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, they really impressed all the guests who came from about 25, 30 foreign countries and 42 states.
Wow.
Tell me about your children. Well, we get one of them here. Who's your – you were going to bring her this year, and
right.
she didn't come.
Oh, my daughter Jordan, she can't wait to get here to Pepperdine. Every time I come out here, she says, I want to go.
How old is she now?
So she's in seventh grade now.
Seventh grade.
And she's seen the pictures, and she's heard the reports, and she used to watch Zoe 101, which I think was filmed
That's
here
right,
on
it
campus.
Was.
So I hope the next time I come out,
I'm going to remember. And now her name is Jordan?
Her name is Jordan.
And then who's coming after that?
Right. Our son Jacob, he's in second grade. And so who knows? Maybe
yeah.
both of them will be Pepperdine students.
Well, we hope you'll keep coming. You said 10 times in 15 years, so.
I'd love coming out here. It's such a breath of fresh air. It really is.
There are a lot of exciting things happening at Pepperdine.
Mm-hmm.
And last night with the students and today with the area ministers, you got to sort of plug into two very different audiences,
yeah.
but both with their own kind of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we appreciate your ministry. And
thank you, Jerry.
Appreciate your books. And boy, you were well received today. As the person who organizes this event, I listen to what everybody says afterward. But look how long they stayed afterward. Nobody left.
Mm-hmm.
30 minutes after you finished speaking, it looked like the whole room was still full of people talking.
Yeah.
So you really engaged us well. That was a great day. Thank you for coming and keep coming back.
It was an honor. Thank you, Jerry.